Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
Welcome to the Final Inspection Show. I'm Steve Zocchi, along with my trusty sidekick, the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski.
Hello.
Feeling better today, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm a little under the weather, but it is what it is. So, yeah. Ready to talk some racing and, you know.
Well, you sounded better than yesterday, because even your text messages were coming across a little gravelly.
So yesterday was rougher than today, so hopefully every day is a step in the right direction here.
Glad you're in. Always good to have you on the show. Always a lot of fun. And speaking of fun show, we have a fun show today. We're going to be talking to Roy Henning from Great Lakes Dragway. You know why, Jeff?
Well, I would imagine that cars will be on the track very, very soon.
Beautiful outside.
It's gorgeous.
A absolute rich, deep blue sky today. Clear, not a cloud in the sky. It looks like it goes on forever. Well, it kind of does, but.
Well, yeah.
Before you hit the ozone layer and the other layers. It is just a spectacular day. A little cool. It's 60. You know, I left and my wife was saying, oh, it's too cold out here. It's like it's 60. It's April. This is, you know, this is what it is.
If I wasn't sick, I'd be wearing shorts right now.
Okay. So, I'm wearing shorts today.
So. I was 50-50 on whether to put shorts or long pants on, but I've been so cold the last couple days, even inside the house, you know, walking around with a jacket on and everything. I got jeans, and I still have my winter coat here, just in case.
You poor thing. So, well, I'm certainly glad you're in the show today. Like I said, a lot to talk about. We're going to talk to Roy Henning in the next half hour from Great Lakes Dragway. Talk about all the good things that are happening in the 2019 season. Looking forward to that. We're also going to talk to Brian Kapinski. Brian Kapinski of Badger Midgets. It's their 83rd season opener, Jeff.
That's awesome.
83 years the Badger Midget Racing Association has been around, and they're at Beaver Dam tonight. Make sure you check out that. I'm looking forward to talking to Brian about that. In the second hour, should be a lot of fun also. We'll be talking with David Land. A lot of controversy about coming, you know, next month. Of course, we got the Kentucky Derby coming up at the, you know, near the first of the month. But after Kentucky Derby, you know, it's all Indianapolis 500.
First the horses, then the horsepower.
That's it. And there's a little bit of controversy. We're going to be talking about that in the second hour, along with Eddie Lapine, who's came back from Long Beach. We'll be talking about what happened in Long Beach and what's going on in the world of sports car racing with Eddie Lapine. So looking forward to that. Should be a lot of fun. Everything's been Tiger Woods lately. Granted. Did you see that coming?
No, but was I shocked? No. You know, I said it on a big show a couple, maybe now about 2 years ago. You know, because they were all saying that Tiger was done and all that. And I said, you can't count Tiger out. He kept coming, you know, back from injury and he'd get hurt again. And then he tried making a comeback. He played terrible. He'd get hurt again. So everybody was sticking a fork in him. But the last major that he won on a broken leg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the guy is superhuman to begin with. That's why I never counted Tiger out. You know, whether you rooted for him in the past, whether you were rooting for him at the Masters or you've rooted against him forever, that's all up to you. But it was just what a phenomenal accomplishment, personal accomplishment for Tiger. Obviously, it's fantastic for the world of golf. NASCAR needs a Tiger Woods. You know, Tiger alone has kept the purses, the value for the winners, and kept people coming into the gates to see these tournaments year after year after year. So what he brings alone helps everybody from this, you know, the top 10 golfers in the world to the bottom 10 golfers with their PGA Tour card.
It certainly does. Well, you know, looking through the what's happened in the world of the racing, motorsports media this week, and I saw NASCAR America, NASCAR's best moments, and then, okay, that's fine. And I saw, let's see here. Is Kyle Busch the Tiger Woods of NASCAR? I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no, please, no. Thankfully, it was a caller. A caller called it. And thankfully, Kyle Petty, who I have a lot of respect for, and is usually, not always, but usually the voice of reason, you know, said, no, he's not. You know, because Tiger's bigger than golf. Tiger is you know, is all encompassing.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think he said, Tiger doesn't move the needle. He is the needle.
Right.
And so he was saying, you know, and it's, you know, Kyle Busch is, you know, love him or hate him and that, but he's not that big yet. And I don't think he will be. However, you know, he did say, well, who was, well, you look at Dale Sr.
Mm-hmm.
Dale Sr. and Richard Petty probably are the two that you can think of. He did mention Dale Jr. somewhat, and yeah, I can see that. But Dale Jr. was
more name than success.
Exactly. You know, I mean, he won a lot of races, but he's not Tiger, and he's not his daddy.
Right.
You know, I still love Dale Jr. Don't get me wrong. We've been very critical in the past on Dale Jr., but it wasn't necessarily on Jr. itself, but more on the fans. But that's another story. But anyways, and I thought that was interesting. It's true. You know, I mean, if you look at sports icons that are, you know, huge, well, you look at Tiger, LeBron.
You know, obviously Jordan, Tom Brady.
But Tom Brady doesn't, he you don't see him, he's not an endorsement kind of, he's on everything. He doesn't need that.
No, he's not. But if you ask a random person at the grocery store who doesn't watch any football, name one football player, chances are they're going to say Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know, he's been in 800 Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm. 812.
12, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So, yeah, I mean, thankfully, they reined it in because I was really worried about that because I thought, oh, no, here we go. NASCAR is trying to catch on someone else's coattails and go along for the ride again, you know, by comparing their stars to whoever's stars. You know, here we go, trying to be the NFL, trying to be, you know. But, no, thank you, Kyle Petty, for putting everything into perspective. So I was happy.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities between Tiger Woods and Kyle Busch. You know, both.
Oh, like when Tiger Woods plays in the Nike Tour and just mops up the Nike Tour, yeah? Like that, yeah, when he goes in there. Hey, guys, I'm playing in Galveston, Texas here. And, oh, Tiger won by 17 strokes. Oh, no, that's right, he doesn't do that.
You know, they're both very divisive. And either, you know, it seems like a lot with Tiger Woods, either you love him or you hate him. Kyle Busch is the exact same
way. But there's a lot of respect for the game.
Of course.
And I think the issue with Kyle Busch is his bottom feeding.
It's also his attitude.
I you know, my feeling was you got to 200, I would have announced I have now retired from the truck and the Xfinity series. Thank you, you know.
Well, you know, It's hard to say that. You've got guys like Kyle Larson.
Because that's the only way you get sponsors. I understand.
You've got guys like Tony Stewart. You know, they retire. They step, like Stewart, you know, he steps away from NASCAR. and he's still running sprint cars.
Because he wants to, though.
Exactly.
He's doing what he wants to do.
And I'm sure Kyle Busch likes, you know, I'm sure he enjoys, and if you're dominating every race in the Xfinity and the truck series you're in, who wouldn't like it? You know, but, you know, they're both very divisive personalities. Kyle Busch, his attitude gets him in a lot of trouble. He won in Chicagoland. The fans are booing. He does the whole crying gesture to the crowd.
Well, that's fine. He's playing the bad guy. I can actually appreciate that. That's good.
And I do too. But even back when Tiger was at the top of his game pre-injury and pre-marital issues, you know, he would miss a shot. He would swear on the tee box. And, you know, little Ethel and, you know, grandson Timmy would be going nuts at home like, oh, my God, Tiger used some bad language. Well, you know, he's such an awful guy.
And there's other guys who got that. I mean, Tony Stewart went through that. A.J. Foyt. A.J. Foyt was just an ass at the track if things weren't going right.
Right.
And other drivers. Alan Kulwicki was like that. Alan Kulwicki was not a pleasant person when things are going bad. And all these people that go, oh, he's, you know, yeah, yes, we heard. Everybody loves Alan, this and that. But, I mean, those who really knew him, and these are the ones that say this, are, you know, yeah, he was just unbearable when things are crap. You know, I saw that at Milwaukee. I saw him when I knew, I just keep your distance, don't even say hi, because things aren't going well. And that was something my dad taught me. You know, if you're going to get autographs when I was a little kid, you know, you got to pick your time. And he would say, yeah, if you see AJ and he doesn't look like he's having fun or doesn't, don't ask him. You know, and those are the guys, those are your driven guys, though. You know, those are the guys that were, I mean, the guys that are, and I don't care what sport it is, the guys that have the most attitude, you need attitude. I always get a kick out of, when you hear people talk about a race car driver. Yeah, well, it's all egos now. It's always been egos.
Of course it is.
I don't care. You go back to 1911, Ray Haroon and Ralph DePalma, Joe Dawson and all these guys. They had egos. That's why they were in it.
Mm-hmm.
They loved it. But you have to have that. I don't care if you're a race car driver before World War I, if you're a World War II fighter pilot. Those are occupations that are on that upper crust that not everybody can do. And those who try that maybe can't, those are the guys that are getting shot down or you know, going off the track in a ball of flame. Because it's difficult, it's hard, and you got to have that drive. And most of the people that have that kind of drive have an ego. Well, and you're going to have an ego.
The alpha of the alpha personalities.
Exactly. It's a college sport. You know, you see, you and I have seen this with college athletes that are coming up through, and you know, they don't know how to act. And you see this when things start to go bad with them because, well, since the age of 12, everybody's been telling them how great they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've never been told no. But that's what's so amazing and why it's so great to be a sports fan is because you have two separate categories. You have the guy who's got the attitude, got the ego, and he's labeled as driven. Mm-hmm. And focused, and he's locked in and ready to compete, and he'll give his all for the sport. And you get the other guy on the other hand, like Kyle Busch, attitude, ego, focus, but he's a spoiled brat. He doesn't represent his sport as well as he should because of what he says and some of the ways he acts. You know, that's what makes being a fan and why, obviously, sports radio is such, you know, the driving force that it is because you have two of the same guys that fans put in two completely separate categories depending on who they like and who they don't.
You know, it's funny. I remember in Jim McGee's book, talking about Bobby Unser. Bobby Unser didn't really like teammates. He wanted to keep all the information for himself. So they bring in Rick Mears, and Rick is talented, and, well, Bobby is thinking, well, you know, it'll be a few years, you know. Here's Bobby Unser in his, you know, mid-40s. Rick Mears, this kid from Bakersfield Desert, you know, he's talented, but it's going to be a while before he, you know. Well, right away, Rick Mears is so talented, he's, like, pushing Uncle Bobby. And Roger was always like, you know, we have team. We if we have team cars, you guys share information because we're getting twice the testing. All the teams do it now, but Roger was real emphatic early on, trying once again to gain that unfair advantage. So it was not unusual for Uncle Bobby to, what kind of, you know, what springs are you running, to give the wrong information to Rick's crew, just to throw him off because he didn't want to tell him. Well, I'll tell you, but I'm not going to tell you the right information. And supposedly in Jim McGee's book, Jim McGee was like, yeah, this is not making sense. The springs he's saying they're running with everything, with the tire pressures and everything, it's not adding up. He calls Roger, I think we have a problem here. This is what he said. Right, you know, Penske, smart guy, but he was also a race car driver, knows cars. Goes, well, what did he say? He's like, no. That's not right. Go down at the car. Go down to the garage. Let's find out. They go down. It's like, you know, late at night. And then they look. Nope. So he calls Roger. Tells Roger, he's fired. Jim's like, what? Tell him to clean out the garage. He's done. This is, the car's already been qualified for the 500. I'm reading this. I'm like, whoa. He's like, tell him, and Jim's like, I'm going to wait till the morning. And then Penske called. He called Penske the next morning. He said, oh, what I said last night, let's just have a talk. But I'm like, whoa, because Penske's a guy. You know, he's probably the most calculated guy in the world.
Absolutely. You
know, except for this week, which we're going to talk about in the second hour, but that's another thing. But, yeah, it's like everybody, you know, and you heard about this with the Packers. This misinformation, was he running the plays? Was he not running the plays? What kind of stuff? What all this here? And that just, I don't care what it is, if it's in the world of business, the world of sports, auto racing, you name it. When things start going bad, everybody's out for themselves type thing, you know. And that's where the egos come in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Egos, not eagles. Egos. So, yeah, it's, you know, everybody's got big egos, but no. Kyle Busch is not Tiger Woods, but congratulations to Tiger. Congratulations, Martin Truex, on that win at Richmond. Wasn't the best race. Not every race has to be the best race, but it was entertaining. Lots of racing, lots of grooves, you know.
It wasn't phenomenal, but it was by far the best race of the year so far.
There you go. Exactly. So, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Best race of the year so far. Does
fun
that
track,
say much?
Fun
no.
track. We need more of those tracks. You should race four times at Richmond.
Yes, please. I'm all for it.
So let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to play The Price is Right.
Nice. That's why you brought in the Drew Carey outfit for me?
No. We're going to talk about that. Actually, I just have to bring this up. This is a lot of fun. So, coming up next. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zotke along with Jeff Orlowski. In fact, Jeff Orlowski.
Hello!
Come on down.
All right.
You're the next contestant on The Price is Right.
Beautiful.
Yeah. You know, surfing YouTube last night, I found the first Price is Right. It was called The New Price is Right. And I used to watch this. My mom used to watch it. So you come home from work or come home from school. I mean, you know, it'd be on, I believe. I remember that. And Match Game.
Okay.
I used to watch.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I think Price was Right was still on. And I used to play it as a kid. So I'm watching this. The Bob Barker one, I guess they relaunched in September of 72.
Okay.
Which coincided when we moved to Milwaukee from West Dallas. And it was kind of cool for the play, because the videos that they had on YouTube were the raw video feed. So they got the clapper, you know, take one, you know, Price is Right, you know, September 17, 1972.
nice
clapper and everything. So the video quality is really, really good. And then there's other ones. If you see on there, they're from the Game Show Network. When the Game Show Network first started, they were airing a lot of old game shows, which was a lot of fun to see, especially the Match Game ones, which still are funny to this day.
I watched some of those last night.
Yeah, and so The Price is Right is on, and I'm watching it. And it's just, some of the things you just kind of shake your head. One thing, the women looked a lot older than they do now. You could tell that now she's probably like 29, but she looks like she's about 45. And they were, the other thing is just how out of control they were. Even I'm watching it with my wife Susan. We're like, there was one lady. Her husband got on. Her eyes were literally bugging out of her head, and she was like sprawled on the chair. It just totally out of control.
Well, half of them were hammered. I was watching Match Game from 1977 last night. They had this lady on there, and which I'm almost positive it was a woman. She had this haircut that was just, oh my God, awful. And it was hilarious, man.
What?
And they're hammered.
There was this one, they had this guy on. He's kind of pudgy, and back then, nobody wore clothing that fit.
Right.
It was always too tight, especially the guys. They wore a dress shirt, which they'd have to pull everything together just to try and button it, and if they exhaled, all the buttons would probably pop. So this guy comes up, and the hair is just like, and I think I figured it out, why 70s hair was so bad. Because if you look, like just a few years before, and even still guys were still wearing crew flat tops. So to be a barber in the 50s and 60s, you really didn't know how to cut hair.
Right.
You cut everybody's hair the same way. So when the styles, the Beatles come over and rock and roll and everything, and the styles started to get longer, I don't think the barbers knew how to cut hair. So that's why, because this guy, I can just picture him in the chair talking to some guy, 60-year-old guy who served in World War II. And, I need a haircut. Well, I want it a little bit longer. And I parted on the side, and it looks like literally he pulled it down with a comb, and it stayed there. And it's combed off the one side. It's kind of wavy. It looks awful. And, the guy just kind of trimmed around it kind of a little bit, didn't layer it. There's no layering or anything. And it's kind of got a maybe some bro cream. He probably – because the dry look, remember, the dry look is the new way. Yeah. So, but he couldn't wear the dry look because it probably would frizz out. So he kind of has this in-between thing. It just looks awful. So, but what's fun is some of the things they have on here. Or some of the women that run up with, you go, oh, that's a wig. Because women would wear wigs, just to wear wigs. I remember as a little kid, 6 years old, I walked into I was looking for something, and I walked into my mom's closet. And up on the thing, I freaked out. I looked up, and there's the styrofoam head with a wig on it.
That's weird.
Well, they wore wigs in the 60s and the early 70s. The pantsuits, everybody, I would like to know how many of the keyboard organs they gave out. Because it seems like every show they had an organ.
Oh, yeah.
And did you have a grandma or somebody that had the and you press the button, it goes,
no.
And then you,
no.
You tried to play it, no?
My grandparents, they were a lot older. I never knew my grandparents on my mom's side. They both died before I was born. On my dad's side, they were both much, much older.
Yeah.
So the only thing I really remember of my grandparents was, I would go to their house on a Saturday afternoon with my dad or whatever. And they'd both be in the basement, just on the north side of Chicago. Both got their Lazy Boy, Cubs games on the TV.
Oh, really?
A pack of Pall Malls and a bottle of scotch. And
really?
They just sat there and smoked their brains out and got hammered and watched the Cubs.
Well, your grandparents were a lot more cooler than my grandparents.
That's all they did. Every single time I went over there.
Because I think my grandparents, they just, on my mother's side, they just sat in a room and just looked out the window. At least that's what it seemed to, you know, 10-year-old Steve. So.
Yeah.
The fashions were awful.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob Barker always looked good.
Of course.
Bob Barker, even though we had leisure suits and everything, he was smart enough to know was, I'm going to stay kind of traditional. And if you look at those suits, I didn't know what a good suit was until I actually went to a tailor and bought a good suit.
Okay.
And it's the worst thing you ever did, because then you realize how sloppy you looked with all the other suits before.
Oh, yeah.
So I finally got, you know, Susan finally said, you need to get a good suit. I'd wear, you know, you off the rack sport coats and what. So I bought a really nice suit. I was like, oh, no. I said, yeah, this really looks good. And now this other, you know, just. And when you see somebody else with a really bad suit, it's like, but Bob Barker, I mean, he looked really good. Handsome man. And Broyhill sofas. Plaid, Broyhill. Uh-huh. It's funny that we were watching, I'm like, oh, yeah, bro, what's that one, the one sofas he ever had? And then it comes up, a new sectional from Broyhill. I go, that's it, Broyhill. And they had this is what's really cool is when you do the little game within the game, you know, you got to pick how much is the, like, if you go shopping. So you have these little things like Rice-A-Roni.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, I wonder if it tastes as bad as I think it probably did back in 1973. Because, you know, they probably tweaked with the recipe in that.
Oh, yeah.
39 cents for a box of Rice-A-Roni in 1973.
Yeah. Now it's like, what, about a buck and a half?
Probably. But it probably tastes better than two.
Yeah, it's not bad.
They had like Wesson oil. You know, now they say unsaturated, blah, 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 blah. Back then it was, here, Wesson oil. And you could see it was like 10W-40. Like, no wonder guys were dropping dead of heart attacks at the age of 45.
Hello.
I mean, it just looked so unhealthy.
Well, you know, you remember my stepmom, her mom and her grandmother were both alive when I was little. Her mom's still alive now. Every recipe, you know, it's like Paula Deen. You start out with a pound of butter, or you start out with half a cup of Crisco. You know, it's just the fat content in everything is outrageous, and that's why it all tastes so darn good. You know, so yeah. Now, I did see, and sorry to get away from the old time here for a second, but I did see on your Facebook, you sent out a Facebook message about the guy who's dominating Jeopardy right now.
Yes.
Now, we watch and have seen this guy's run, and just absolutely amazing every single day. He's, you know, it's a runaway by like 10 times.
Well, and the story is how he's doing it.
Oh, he's just, you know.
He's found a new way, and you think, you can explain it, right? I think you're going to go where I'm going to go.
Well, you know, instead of the outfit, I was just going to sit there. The one thing that me and my wife can't get over with this guy, and, you know, I like him, and I'm cheering for him because he's a professional sports gambler.
Right.
Which is, you know, obviously what I would love to be. But his smile.
Yeah, he clenches his teeth when he smiles.
He looks just straight awful when he smiles. Yeah. Every time he smiles, I just sit there and laugh, and my wife's like, oh, my God. You know, she hates it. And I'm like, the day after you learn to accept his smile, he'll lose. And but, you know, he's just dominating, and it's great.
James Holzhauser, he lives in Vegas, and It's funny because when you play, I've tried to get on. I got a buddy in Indianapolis too, Tom Beeler. We've been trying to get on Jeopardy,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't gotten past the online tests, which are harder than the game,
right?
On TV,
of course,
it really is, and it you get 15 seconds because they have to do that now because of Google,
right?
So it has to be boom, 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 and there's far. And I'll give you a hint: know your Shakespeare, because there's Shakespeare in those online tests.
Well, Shakespeare, opera, yes. Religion,
and
all
he said,
that.
How did he
cancel
and,
me
and,
out?
And, you know, Alex asked him, you know, how he says, well, you know, I kind of was always in trivia, but he said, you study what you don't know. and study the things you need to. And so for me, it would be Shakespeare. I used to know this from school, and that would be like Roman gods. There's a lot of, and Greek gods, there's a lot of
mythological
stuff. And probably, well, anything. Oh, like 18th century literature, that kind of, of literature or fiction. I've never been a fan of fiction, so, you know, something like that. But it's quite impressive, and especially if you're a Jeopardy nerd, which I found out, I didn't know this until a couple months ago, that you do watch Price is Right and Jeopardy and that, which we do also. He's kind of broken the, he takes big bets. And so he's won, how many is he at? 10?
I think he's at 11 now. I think okay. Yesterday was 11.
But here's the thing. The record is, I think, 74 by Ken Jennings.
Right.
Which is a phenomenal, but here's the thing. He is, I think, number two or number three in all-time winnings.
Yeah.
Because he's been winning so much. So he's been taking these big stabs and dominating the board. When they're done with the two Jeopardy rounds, just pick it. He's usually like on average, I think you would agree, like anywhere from 30,000 to 40,000, and then the other contestants would be like at 5,000, 4,000.
Right.
That's how much of a he's been just dominating. And somebody he broke another record where he went 41 for 41. He didn't get any wrong in one of the, I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday show.
Wow.
So, which was really impressive.
I know he set the single day Jeopardy winnings record twice.
Yeah.
So far in his first 11 days. So I want to say one was 100 and something thousand, and then he beat that just a few days later. So he is just straight killing it.
Where Ken Jennings was victory by 1,000 cuts.
Right.
And the number of games. This James Holzhauser is doing it with a cannon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is just blowing out the competition.
Ken Jennings was a butter knife. This guy is a machete.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been really, really impressive. So,
yeah, it's awesome. It's fun to watch. And you could tell that racing's got the week off.
Well, we're going to give Roy Henning a call. Yes, exactly. And, you know, it is. Because been talking a lot of NASCAR and that, and unfortunately there's been a lot of negativity around NASCAR. I wanted to kind of just take a little bit of a break and just have some fun. Let's have a fun show.
Nothing wrong with that.
Speaking of fun, we're going to talk to Roy Henning coming up next. We're going to talk Great Lakes Dragway on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you, of course, by Great Lakes Dragway, the legendary Great Lakes Dragway. Make sure to check out greatlakesdragway.com, and also David Hobbs Honda. Make sure check out DavidHobbs.com for all the best in new and used inventory at DavidHobbs.com.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda. In fact, joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline right now, it is Roy Henning from Great Lakes Dragway. Welcome to the show, Roy.
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Fantastic. It is a beautiful day in sunny, clear southeastern Wisconsin. And I think I heard motors going down the drag strip at Great Lakes today, didn't I?
Yeah, those were not snow blowers. Those were not snow plows. Those were actually cars going down the track trying to go really fast on actual asphalt.
Fantastic. It's about time. We've been waiting for this all winter long. And when the racing kicks off with the racing at Great Lakes Dragway, it's certain, you know, spring is here and summer is right around the corner. And what's the best way to get tickets at Great Lakes Dragway?
Still mostly just, getting there and going right to the box office at the front. But the easiest and cheapest way to go to Great Lakes Dragway is to still go online and get your season pass, because it's kind of like the zoo pass, where basically you go like three times, pays for itself. Every time after that is basically free. So getting that season pass, you know, once you get that at the beginning of the year, then you don't feel bad. You go for one beer and hang out for a half hour and take off and go do what you got to do and come back and, you know, go another time and you don't feel like you got to stay there the whole time.
And this is pretty cool. I see you're doing this again this year. Is Wednesday is a ladies' night. So if you're out with your girlfriend, she goes, oh, let's do something different. Well, what better way to go see some racing at Great Lakes Dragway on a nice Wednesday night evening?
Well, and especially on those nights, the ladies are racing for free. And to be honest, unless you've been there, you wouldn't really believe how many women come out and drag race and have a blast and have a great time doing it and are also very good at doing it. It's something that started up a few years ago and we kind of carried over. And, you know, it's a real good night for us.
Fantastic. And then what's also cool is if you're a fan of a certain car, you certainly have things like Ford Fun Day. You have Import Wars. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, today we've got Import First Domestic. We got a lot of Import Wars events because we've had a lot of calls for those lately. And then we've also got some of the specific events like, you know, Buick Days, Ford Days, things like that, where we try and get, you know, a whole class genre out there. And whether you have one or whether you just like looking at them, they're always a great day to come out. And then we're also going to have a lot of the, you know, get off the street and get onto the track street racing, but on the track nights. You know, with flag starts and we turn off the clocks and you're going to come race your buddies and not let anybody know how fast your car is. A lot of cool stuff like that. So we're trying to include anybody and anybody that, you know, wants to go down that track this summer.
What's neat about the Import Wars and that is, you know, people talk about demographics with racing. Now, some racing, you know, the demographics aren't that great. You know, it skews older and that. That certainly is not the case with the Import Wars, is it?
No, Import Wars is a lot of younger guys, and, you know, you get the Hondas, you get the you get some Volkswagens out there, and, you know, everybody's souping up their stuff and, you know, pretty much having a good time, and sometimes it looks like, you know, a Fast and Furious movie out there.
What are some of the other things that we can look forward to? I know one of my favorite is the Memorial Day weekend classic with all the vintage stuff.
Yeah, Memorial Day and Labor Day is, you know, obviously our staples every summer, but we're bringing back the Night of Fire this year, which is going to be a lot of jet cars and wheel standers. So that's more of a, you know, kid thrill seeker oriented event where, you know, if you want to see that stuff, I went to, you know, an event at the Fiserv with the monster trucks. And while it was kind of cool, it was a little bit loud and a little bit smoky and, you know, I kind of longed for being out at the racetrack because at least, you know, you can walk away a little bit if it gets loud on you. But, yeah, that's one of our good ones that the kids definitely love.
We're talking with Roy Henning from Great Lakes Dragway on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. I know one of the things that Jeff and I look forward to is all the great food. What's new on the food side? Because you not only do you just have good track food, but it's a wide variety of different choices, too.
You can get just about anything. I saw that they were talking about the Fiserv and Miller Park and food options, you know, earlier on the Facebook page. And but yeah, Great Lakes Dragway. I think we, you know, we kind of get overlooked because we're not, you know, a major sport center like those places or like Lambeau. But you can find anything from a gyro to homemade pizza to ribs, tacos, hamburgers, hot dogs, brats. I mean, just about anything you can think of at your favorite cookout, we've got it.
You had me at gyro. Roy, the one thing that that I keep trying to push for here is to get a match race set up between you and the Z-Man. You know, he's got this, you know, supercharged turbo Ford Escape that that he's driving. He claims, you know, it's 879 horsepower. So I would love to see, you know, some, you know, I'll throw $5 on. We'll call it a charity race, but, you know, have you and Steve go head to head and just watch him mop the floor with them. I'd love it.
Hey, I'm game with that because, you know, I got the Volkswagen Beetle gun, and so we can have old school versus new school, and we can go eighth mile or quarter mile, and we could do maybe a little reaction time one and a final time one. But, yeah, I'm game with that. I'm absolutely game with that.
Oh, he's sweating already, Roy. You shouldn't have said that. How is – I know that you soup up old Volkswagens and stuff like that. How's that going?
It's busier than busy could be. I'm sending stuff all over the world, and I honestly can't build these motors fast enough. But it's you know, it's nice to be able to go to work every day and enjoy what you do. And you know, they ask you what you do if you'd win the lottery, and people say they quit their job. I'd still build motors because I have a fun time and a blast doing it.
So if I asked you and said, "Hey, Roy, can you build me a 6-second VW bus?" You'd be able to do it.
Not quite a 6-second bread box. You know, you need a lot of turbo and other kind of stuff like that to push that one. But maybe like 13 seconds.
All right, that'd work too.
Hey, I got a question for you, Roy.
Yeah.
If you look at these auction, you know, on TV, whether it's Mecum or Barrett Jackson, I mean, those Volkswagen buses are just going for crazy dollars. Has that changed for you guys, what you're doing and what you're restoring?
Well, let's just say this. If my dad had kept all the Volkswagen buses he had back in the 90s and I had them right now, I could retire and not work another day in my life because they used to go for $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000, and now the junker buses to get rebuilt go for, you know, $20,000 or $25,000.
Wow.
And yeah, those nice ones, you know, and they're only a few, you know, specific years, the 23 window, the 21 window, the 67 only, stuff like that's what's going for, you know, $150,000, $200,000. But it does affect, you know, a lot more people are getting those cars. And while I don't do the restoration myself, we provide the engines and transmissions for a lot of them. And so that definitely has, you know, brought up the interest in the old Volkswagens. And I don't think it's ever going to die.
And make sure you check out Great Lakes Dragway online and also on Facebook, on their Facebook page. And what's kind of cool is we've been on our Facebook page on the final inspection. We've been posting some vintage photos thanks to Pat Heaney and Scott Krieger, who's from the Mike Dowd collection. I don't know if you've seen those, Roy, but a lot of cool stuff.
Oh, yeah, they're fantastic.
Great stuff of the slingshots and some of the gassers and that from back in the day. So a lot of fun. Make sure you check out Great Lakes Dragway, though, on Facebook. And that's probably the best place to get your up-to-date, especially if weather is a question later in the year, correct?
Yeah, we try and, you know, keep the Facebook page up to date at least, you know, a few times a day so you can kind of just click on and check out what's going on. You can always call, but sometimes there's not somebody in the office, and it's easier to update the Facebook page than the website. So, yeah, definitely check out the Facebook page, and you'll see what's happening each day.
All right. And, Roy, thanks for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. The gates were open at 9 o'clock. Cars are on the track. And how late are you open today, Till?
We're open till 9 o'clock today. Next month we start being open till 10:30, but it's still an earlier month in April, and so you got plenty of time to get out there this afternoon and have a good time.
Looking forward to it, Roy. Thank you for joining the show. We appreciate your support and looking forward to getting out to Great Lakes Dragway.
All right, thank you as always.
Okay, Roy Henning joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935.
Coming up next, we're talking Badger Midgets on the Final Inspection Show. Final Inspection Show. I'm Steve Zotke.
Circus Edition.
Along with Jeff Orlowski. Talking Badger Midgets on the Final Inspection Show. Brian Kapinski, unfortunately, was not able to join us. He had a little minor family emergency come up, so he couldn't get to the phone.
I hope everything's all right.
Fine. It just... kids, who, you know.
Oh, yeah. Been there.
You know that.
Been there.
So.
Glad everything's good.
You guys have to put up with me.
Uh-oh. So here, let me ask you a question about Badger Midgets, Steve.
Well, first of all, let's take care of Badger Midgets tonight.
Well.
It's the opener at Beaver Dam Raceway. 83rd year.
That's huge.
Only World War II could stop Badger Midget Racing Association.
That's awesome.
And that's pretty cool. And Beaver Dam, one of my favorite tracks. Fast track, good racing. It's a nice facility. It'll be a little chilly, but, you know, there are hardcore race fans. It could be 20 degrees. If they're saying it's going to be racing, they'll be out there. But looking forward to that. Badger Midgets always put on a great show.
Yeah, I brought my daughter out to a couple of them, and you know, there were a couple that were chilly, and but she muscled through and had a great time. So it, you know, it's a fantastic show, and you know, what a great day. You could spend the sunshine hours of today down at Great Lakes and then head up to Beaver Dam tonight to watch the midgets.
Well, this is cool. You know, it's 2019. Everything's digital, video. So for my friends in Indianapolis or St. Louis or down in Illinois, we got a lot of online listeners. Can't make it up to Beaver Dam tonight? You can watch it on TV.
Yeah, that's
Badger
awesome.
Badger Racing TV. BadgerRacing.tv, I should say. And for $6.95 monthly access or $49.95 for the year. So you want to get your midget fix on and you're not able to get up here, or you're living in Australia. We have friends in Australia and everything. Come on, you know, just you can watch them anytime you want.
Midget fix, we're still talking racing, right?
Midget racing fix.
Oh, okay, yes. There we go. Just checking.
So it's a great. It's a full season. The season runs through the 21st of September. They head out to Iowa next week, and then Sycamore Speedway on May 18th, and then the season opener at Angel Park is May 19th. So they'll be also racing at Luxembourg, at Plymouth, and Wilmot. Looking forward to that. Wilmot is July 8th. No, correction, July 6th, even with my glasses on. So looking forward to that. I think you and I went to a Badger race at Wilmot a couple of years
ago.
Yes,
we did.
So we need to get back out there again. Looking forward to it. So if you have a chance, get out to Beaver Dam or watch them on TV at BadgerRacing.com. Should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely, and a heck of a deal. So we only got about a minute here before we have to go to break, Steve. But who are your three favorite, or who do you consider the three best midget drivers?
Well, probably the best. You got to go with, I think Mel Kenyon. Mel Kenyon is right up there, but a lot of one of my favorites, of course, is Stan Fox.
Mm-hmm.
He's right up there. Gotta love KL, Kevin Olson, friend of the show, and then another one, Dean Billings. Love Dean Billings. His dad and my dad were friends back in the day, so those are the guys I really looked up to when I was a kid.
All right,
and. Let's see here. Jason Leffler, talented kid.
Yes, he was.
Did I mention Tony Stewart?
Not yet.
Tony Stewart, very talented. So those are the guys I really looked up to back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. That's a heck of a list.
It is. There's a lot of good racers now, too. So guys tearing it up, Christopher Bell and whatnot. So I tell you what, let's take a break. We'll stop here for some commercials and a sports flash at the top of the hour. When we come back, we're going to talk Indy 500 qualifying controversy. Seems like 1996 all over again. On the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
But the kart divorce became inevitable when George reserved 25 of Indy's 33 slots for IRL car owners, the better to promote his venture.
We're being shut out of Indianapolis. We have 26 or 27 drivers here, and 8 of them would have been allowed to run Indianapolis. What would we do with the other 20 guys? Just send them home?
To me, it's like apple pie and motherhood. It's something you just don't mess with. And frankly, I think you're going to screw it up.
At this particular point, our people want to go to Indy. At the end of the day, want to go on a level playing field. At the end of the day, want to go on a level playing field.
There you have it. We don't reserve spots at Indianapolis. It's the fastest 33. Well, let's go to the Midwest Bank hotline, talk to David Land of YouTube. And David, thank you for joining the show. What is going on at 16th and Georgetown?
It's interesting how things change when the shoe is on the other foot. We have some car owners that were pretty prominent in a little thing we like to call the split that kind of really destroyed open wheel racing in this country. Roger Penske, Chip Ganassi, Michael Andretti, and according to Rob Miller, Bobby Rahal as well, are advocating that the top 25 in points will be locked into the Indianapolis, or should be locked into the Indianapolis 500, and the scraps should be handed to all the other small teams to fight it out for the final eight positions. It sounds very similar to something Tony George proposed in 1996, and it was so egregious to those team owners at that time that they decided to start the U.S. 500, and we know the rest of the story from there, I think.
It really is surprising when I heard this. I understand why. And I've heard what they've been saying. We need to protect sponsors, but David Land, you have the audacity to debate these fellows, these titans of motorsports, with facts. How dare you?
So tell us how that works.
Yeah, I mean, it's because if I recall, Michael Andretti's car got bumped, and their sponsor was DHL. Of course, they did get into the Indy 500 through a wad of money, but they never left, did they? What are some of the other examples you had?
Oh, Lord. I literally have put up a spreadsheet on my Twitter. If you want to go to my Twitter, DLand91.
Actually, no, or, I recall, yeah.
Yeah, so you can actually – I went through the history books and tried to get every single full-time team that had been bumped between last year and 1992. It was something like, I think it was around 33 teams. And the vast, vast majority of sponsors that were on those cars, even if they left the team that didn't perform well enough to get into the show, they went to another better performing team for the next year. So there's such a small percentage of sponsors that have actually left the sport after being bumped. I don't really see the data to back up what the team owners are claiming.
Okay, and then here's fact number two, or argument number two, was it's bad for the sport when somebody of importance misses the race, and here you come with Google Analytics to debate that. Tell us what you found on that. I thought this was fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame that we have all this public information to access. And I should, you know, put the disclaimer that, you know, Google is only one aggregate source. You know, it's not like I've gone to three or four different peer-reviewed sources and gotten this information. But according to Google, what their, trends indicate is that the top driver from last year's qualifications weekend, which is usually one of the biggest ones that promotes the race, was far and away James Hinchcliffe. He actually had double the exposure online than the pole sitter, Ed Carpenter. And the kind of kicker to that is that Pippa Mann, not a full season driver, Indy one-off, had only 2 points less in terms of Google's ranking of how these drivers trended than the pole sitter, Ed Carpenter. So the 35th place driver got nearly as much media exposure as the pole sitter. Let's consider that the next time we start saying that there's nothing to be gained from being bumped for in terms of exposure for a sponsor.
Yeah, it is just, it's really frustrating when you see, you know, the arguments and whatnot. I thought Willie T. Ribbs really had something interesting to say on this. He wrote, in 1977, 1991, one yard of bricks created a milestone for me and the queen of IMS, Janet Guthrie. We showed up with our helmet and talent and a little bit of money to make the field of 33 unencumbered by the rich boys looking for more of a handout. quit bitching, make the show, or go home. And Willie should know, because I think in 94 he actually got bumped or missed a race. So he didn't just go there and made the race every year. It was hard. And when he broke that barrier in 1991, there was a lot of cars that went home, including Johnny Rutherford and a few others that you were thought were a shoo-in for the race. So, you know, it really did mean something. Now, another debate we've been hearing, and this one kind of surprised me. Well, it's not 1977 anymore. It's not 1991 anymore. You know, things have changed. And, you know, we have more cars, we have, you know, and possibly bumping, but we need to protect those guys that follow the season all the way through. And the person that said that was Robin Miller.
Shocking, wasn't it?
It was. I was really surprised, because this is the guy who was saying, you know, the 25-8 rule is the worst thing that ever happened to open wheel racing.
Well, Robin's argument, and I disagree with this, is essentially that the traditions no longer matter because there have been so many of them which have gone away. And I cannot agree with that less. I mean, the reason the Indy 500, and I said this in all my videos, the reason the Indy 500 is the only profitable race for IndyCar is because of the tradition. It's because of these rules. It's because of the unpredictability of this race. I don't understand why the team owners want to meddle with this race, the one race that works financially, rather than fix the other 15 events that aren't working financially. That's such a leap in logic. I can't understand it.
It really is. And I got a bad feeling about this though, David, because I wonder if this is all calculated. You know, I wonder if this is the powers to be, saying if you want change, go throw out some, are these trial balloons or are these balloons really going to fly? Because I wonder if we're going to have an announcement in about 3 weeks after qualifying saying that next year we're going to lock in 24, 22, whatever it is.
Well, that's definitely, I mean, Mark Miles didn't shut the door on it. He said that 2019 is going to be the way it's been announced. So there will be a bump day. There will be bumping from the field. In some ways, I kind of want to be, I want to kind of see a Penske or Ganassi go home just because of them bringing this up. But to be honest with you, on the other hand, I almost kind of wish, I hope that they all get in this year, so that they really don't have a leg to stand on when they try to bring this all up again in 2020.
Well, and there's always factors of why this happens. If you look back in some of the reasoning, one of the reasons why Team Penske missed a race in 95, well, it was because of the chassis. You know, the power that they had in 94 with the Mercedes pushrod was so that it overcame and it masked a lot of problems that chassis had. So when they came back in 1995, they're like, oh, we have an issue here. But it's Team Penske. They thought, we're going to figure this thing ourselves. When they finally made the decision to go with a Reynard, it was very, very late in the day, and they made the fatal mistake of going, they were offered the setup sheets, and they declined them. We can do the setups. We're Team Penske. We do everything ourselves. And that was a fatal mistake. They weren't able to, Donald Davidson, I thought, was very interesting in this. His reasoning is a reason on why one of the main reasons why they missed a race is because they were never in that position before. They were always in the first couple rows. So for them to have cars on the second weekend was totally foreign in the old qualifying or the traditional qualifying format. So when they're scrambling on the last day and bump day, this was all uncharted territory for them, and they didn't take any of the help that was offered to them by other teams, and thus sort of ended up on the outside looking in. So. And then you look at the Hinchcliffe situation. They had a new engineer and who supposedly was ignoring information from other teams And next thing you know is a kind of the same situation with the abbreviated newer style format. Next thing you know, he's on the outside looking in. So, I mean, sure, the cars usually, you know, that should make the race usually do, especially nowadays. But I think the danger that when they did the merger and there was some talk, maybe you can help me out, David. I want to say about 2011 or maybe there's a situation where we had a lot of cars coming in and there was talk of a cap. They wanted to cap the numbers. And I was so mad. I said, don't put a, you never do that. Because whenever you say we're going to put, oh my God, we could have too many. It seems like whenever IndyCar comes into the situation, next year, we could be looking at scrambling for 33 again because they're going to scare off all these smaller teams. Is that a big possibility that we're concerned about, David?
You know, you could scare off the smaller teams. I think, and this has been a theory that's kind of started to float around. I've said it, several other people have said it at this point, is that it's not the small teams that Penske and Ganassi are worried about. But I'll tell you what, McLaren coming in as a part-time, full-time Formula One team, that scares them. Because if McLaren comes here, wrecks shop, Fernando wins the race by 10 seconds, guess what all the other Formula One teams are going to start kind of perking up their ears and thinking, wait a second, we could come over here at a really low cost, but a high return on investment. We can sell this to our sponsors. We can bring our drivers and all of this stuff. You know, if all these big teams start cherry picking the Indy 500, that means a lot of the sponsorship dollars, a lot of the exposure that the big IndyCar teams, the full season ones, would otherwise get at the Indy 500, may be going to some of these other teams coming in from the outside and taking all the glory.
Excellent point. Let's take a quick break, David. Can you stay over the break and we'll come back and talk a little more IndyCar racing with you?
I think so.
Fantastic. Talking to David Land on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. We'll be right back after this on the Final Inspection Show. The Final Inspection Show brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda. Joining us once again on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is David Land. If you get a chance, make sure to check out his YouTube channel at David Land, L-A-N-D. A lot of good stuff on there. Make sure you like his videos and subscribe. And David, you know, the last couple of days, or the last couple of videos, I should say, regarding this subject on should we lock in drivers for the Indy 500 and that, I don't want to blow smoke up your butt, but I mean, this is some of the best videos I've seen from you. And what kind of feedback have you been getting? I mean, the comment section, have they been blowing up? Have you gotten other feedback? Well, what's kind of the gist of this so far in the last couple of days for you?
Well, I'll tell you, it's certainly been a hot topic. It's been blowing up pretty good on social media, specifically a lot of my thoughts. I've seen kind of going to some of the forums that my name is brought up a lot in terms of one of the people who is defending the 33 fastest starters rules. But it's been mostly positive. I mean, there's been a lot of independently run polls out there, and it's been pretty much anywhere between 89 and 95% of the people don't want to see locked-in starters. You know, the videos themselves have been doing exceptionally well, especially considering they're about the Indianapolis 500 a month before the Indianapolis 500. And I guess for the one thing I'm thankful about for this debate is that we're talking about the Indianapolis 500 at the end of April like it's May 20th.
Mm-hmm. Certainly true.
Yeah, David, quick question here for you. Now, NASCAR, they have in their charter program, is there kind of a worry or a concern that if they start locking in the full-time guys into the 500, it would expand the leader circle program in IndyCar?
I don't think there's a worry about expanding it. I think that's one of the things the team owners are pushing for anyway, is for the leaders circle to either be expanded to more teams or to pay out more money. I think that's one of their main pushes in this particular argument, I think.
Yeah, see, that was the charter program in NASCAR is one of my big concerns, because, you know, it tries to stomp out the lower budget teams, the teams that sit there and try to cherry pick, you know, 5 or 10 races a year that they can bring a car and compete in, which I think brings the more grassroots fan. You know, if NASCAR was running here at Milwaukee and you had a local Milwaukee guy who for a fairly reasonable amount of money could soup up a car and run and try to qualify with these guys, you know, it brings in more of the local crowd, gets guys involved and interested in the sport. And I think the charter or the Golden Leader, program kind of stomps that out.
Well, that's the thing that I brought up today. I mean, in the Daytona 500, the qualifying doesn't even matter anymore.
Right.
And that's essentially what we're arguing for the Indy 500. But here's the thing. Rick Ware Racing was painfully off the pace in the duels, but they had a charter, so they got to race. Guess what they did in the race? They crashed into each other heading into the pit lane, and they took out Jimmy Johnson, an 8-time champion. NASCAR argues that stars matter so much, but they let people in the race who have no business being there because they're too slow and they crash going into the pits, and they take out one of the stars. I don't understand what they're going for or why the IndyCar owners think that's a good idea.
Yeah, it definitely is a head scratcher. What are you looking where? What, you know, I'm thinking this is a done deal for next year. This how it develops, I'm not sure. I think the best situation they could do would be like in 97, is if you can go past faster than the slowest guy, you know, kind of like when they added the two guys, when the 25.8 came in, was an issue in 97, but they let the two guy, I think Lynn St. James and there's another Furman Verlez, Johnny Unser, that was it. And, you know, they let those two guys in, well deserved. But I wonder do you think it could be a situation like that again? Could we see 36 cars at Indianapolis?
Well, here's the thing. If we're going to be arguing fairness, if we really want it to be fair and puppy dogs and rainbows, you ought to just let everybody, I mean, if the 60 cars show up, you should let them all race. If that is what they really want to do, if they really want it to be fair to everybody, then they should just let everybody race, and they should make the Indy 500 qualifying just the Saturday before the race. Because, what the owners are proposing is very self-serving. It's really not for the good of the event. It's not really for the good of the sport. It's for the good of them. For the good of the sport, you want the small teams, and you want the McLarens of the world to get some value out of at least showing up to one race, because they might go full-time sometime in the future. And, you know, there's not a guarantee. There are no guarantees in racing. You never know how long a Penske or a Ganassi is going to be around or be willing to spend this money on the sport. You always need fresh blood, and them starting a country club like they do in NASCAR is preventing more new teams from showing up.
What surprised me on this, I understand from the team point of view, but even then, you know, Ganassi's never had a car get bumped. They've never been really in that position. Penske has, but I explained the reasoning why. And it's so frustrating, especially when you, that's why I wanted to run when that one video you started. I mean, it's a total 180. And you see the issues that NASCAR is having now. IndyCar has made a lot of gains over the last few years. Why would you even, you know, that's why I'm wondering if these are trial balloons. There's something more there under the surface. And I guess we'll find out more, you know, in the month of May. But I just wonder, is there something else there? What's going on with this, David?
Well, I don't know what else they could be doing. I mean, I don't know what their game plan is here, you know, what are they going to do? Split it again? I mean, what is there to split? It's like, take my castle of dirt at this point. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about more fun things. We have James Davison once again teaming up with Dale Coyne. James Davison looked very good. He's one of these cats. He's fast in whatever he drives, but just has not been able to put together a full-time drive in Indy cars, but has shown speed everywhere else he's been. What other driver combinations do you think we can see coming up in the month of May?
Well, I mean, I think we've got 34 now. We don't have a driver yet for Hooncoast, but they did confirm, I think yesterday, that they are going to indeed enter a car. Looks like Kyle Kaiser's going to get it, but it's not entirely confirmed yet. But he's an Indy Lights champion, an American, and easily qualified last year with a one-off team. So I thought that was that could be a combination to watch if you're looking for an underdog.
You know what they're waiting for.
The money?
Yeah, they're waiting for a bigger check to see it.
Yeah.
Just, okay. Okay, Kyle, you're in. We didn't get a bigger check, so okay. You're good.
Yep.
Unfortunately, which is the name of the game, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Pato Award, you know, we've been talking to him up, you know, for weeks now, but he's going to be one to watch at the Indianapolis 500, especially being teammates with Fernando Alonso. I think that team is going to be incredibly strong this year, and Pato, he definitely looks like he may be the guy. He and Colton and Rosenquist, I mean, the rookie class is really the thing I think we need to focus on because it's so strong, it's so deep, and we really, you know, they could win, one of them could win the race. So we just, we got like three or four Montoyas, and that's never happened before as far as I'm concerned.
Is Pato Award or Colton Herta F1 material?
I think they are. I don't know if F1 thinks they're F1 material, but I think if you put either of them in a really strong F1 car, I think they would be very competitive. The problem is that the truly competitive F1 cars, each of the teams have their own feeder system, and the teams that would actually look at them, like the Haas or the Alfa Romeo, you know, they would pay well, but they, you know, Pato or Colton Herta would not be winning races there. They'd be the Romain Grosjeans, and they wouldn't quite be, you know, put up on a pedestal. It would be like the, you know, if an American driver or a driver from IndyCar goes over to F1 and doesn't end up in a Mercedes, you're going to have the same old argument you hear from the F1 fans, you know, how Zanardi couldn't cut it and Michael Andretti couldn't cut it over there. But they, of course, always ignore Jacques Villeneuve. But, you know, whatever.
What's your favorite Indy 500 memory?
Oh, my God. That's a loaded question. There's so many. There are so many. I mean, you know what? I'll give you a bump day memory.
Okay.
Because that's kind of appropriate for the conversation. 2008, it was the first bump day that I really got to see. It was incredible because it was the first year of the merger. You had like six or seven cars all trying to bump their way into the field. And, of course, you guys know probably that Buddy Lazier is my favorite driver. And Buddy was driving a complete TOS for Hemelgarn Racing. And somehow he pulled like 5 miles per hour out of his hat, and he qualified for the race. He bumped his way in. And I, you know, I was in the stands, and I was just jumping up and down because not only did I get to see this incredible bump day, but my favorite driver proved that he belonged, put a car that did not belong in that race in the final seconds. I mean, that was an amazing thing to witness.
You know, that's a good, yes, I do remember that. Buddy's one of those guys, underrated. He kind of, you know, his father helped him and that, but I mean, I remember seeing Buddy racing for leader card at Milwaukee, and you know, he earned his way into it. I mean, he drove a lot of TOSs early on, and then, you know, it was great to see him be successful in the early days of the IRL and that. But yeah, I mean, I think some of his most impressive rides was some of those, you know, later, you know, like when you mentioned on bump day, you know, to, you know, and you ask a lot of drivers, you know, what their best race was. It's not always the race they win. It could be the one that they finish second. And you ask AJ Foyt that his best race he ever drove. He'll say the 1965 Tony Bettenhausen 200 at Milwaukee, because that's when he put the dirt car in the pole, and because he had to refuel, and that car isn't set up to get refueled. He lost a lot of time in the pits and finished second to Gordon Johncock. But there's a lot of drivers like that. And, you know, buddy, yeah, that's a good memory. I'm glad you brought that one up, David.
Well, Bump Day is full of those, though. I mean, it's literally, right. There are legends made, you know?
I was watching 1978. You know, once again, bringing up YouTube, I spent far too much time.
Is that the Herdebees? Is that the Herdebees?
Yes.
Year?
Yeah, unfortunately. And, you know, you see Bob Harkey going out, and then, you know, Al Acquesta is on on the bubble, and then, you know, Joe Saldana and this, you know, 5-year-old Eagle, once he gets like 5 miles an hour, like you were mentioning with Buddy, you know, here's this old car and guy hits 190 in a car that, you know, is scary to drive at 180. So, you know, I mean, those are memories that you certainly remember. I remember the frustration of, you know, I wanted it so much for Johnny Rutherford to get that 25th Indy 500 and was getting bumped, you know, in the early 90s in a lot of cars. And I remember one year with John Menard, he took a time he probably should not have, which seems safe, but turned out wasn't safe and got bumped out. And just the frustration of that, you know, and seeing guys get in that you thought, the worst was when Bernard Jourdain bumped out Johnny Rutherford. I was like, there's no justice in this world. So those are certain good memories. David, mention to the listeners how to subscribe to your YouTube channel.
Yeah, sure. Just head over to YouTube, type David Land into the search bar, and I should be the first one to come up with a nice purple icon. Subscribe for motorsports. It's certainly IndyCar, Indy 500 content. I'm telling you, I'm going to be at the test they're having at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this week. There's going to be a ton of coverage that'll be exclusively on my channel from that. And then throughout the month of May, it's going to be pretty much full coverage of the Indianapolis 500. I've got a lot of special things planned. If you are a race fan, if you're an Indy 500 fan, it's going to be the place to be.
All right, David, certainly appreciate you being on the show. Coming up next, we got Eddie Lapine on the Final Inspection Show. Back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway. Make sure you get out to Great Lakes Dragway today. They are racing today. It's a beautiful day. It's clear skies. Get out to Great Lakes Dragway. See some racing on the drag strip. And also, David Hobbs Honda. I'd like to thank David Hobbs Honda for supporting the show. Make sure to check out DavidHobbs.com for all the best in new and used cars at David Hobbs Honda. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is from RacingNation.com, Eddie Lapine. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Steve.
Hey. It sounds like it's windy there.
It's very windy.
Yeah. You on a golf course, Eddie?
Hey, just enjoying the weather down here.
All right.
You're not walking those dogs, are you?
No.
Okay.
No. Just R&R and... You know,
I wonder how do you line up those dogs? You posted a photo yesterday on Facebook where the two dogs are lined up the same way on their sides. How do you do that?
I have not. It just happened that way. I don't know. I mean, they took a nap in the afternoon in the sun. So
taking a nice sun nap.
Yeah, exactly. No, just recovering from last weekend's Long Beach Grand Prix. It was, as always, the 45th annual Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach was fantastic. You cannot say enough of how to put a race together for the street race there.
Dominating win by Alexander Rossi, and he'll hold off Joseph Newgarden. How impressive is that for him to win two in a row at Long Beach?
Well, it's very impressive. I mean, he's got to figure it out. I mean, it's his home track, and you know, he came to win, and I think I picked him last week. So,
you know, can you get any momentum? Some of the teams say yes, some are, you know, kind of indifferent. But I mean, it's a street road course. But is there any way to get momentum when you go into the month of May at Indianapolis? Does that help you at all, do you think?
Well, I think any time you can win a race, I think that's going to help morale of the team. And everybody's going to step up and try to win another one.
Mm-hmm.
You see it, you know, in any type of racing. Winning is what these guys are there for and getting paid for in the teams. But, you know, the teams work hard, you know, 24/7 to try to put it in the winner's circle. And when they do get a win, it the momentum carries those people that are working on those cars as much as the driver. So it gives it a little extra for the driver as well.
It certainly was. And, of course, the previous day, they had the Bubba Burger Sports Car Grand Prix at Long Beach. And is Felipe Albuquerque and Barboza once again? That's their second in a win too, isn't it? At Long Beach.
Yeah, it was, and it took a. I mean, that race was. I really thought the Whelen car was going to mm-hmm. walk away from it, especially. But again, you know, they made a mistake in the pits, and then a wheel came off. And that's when Pipo Durrani got in the car, and I just thought that they were going to check out.
Well, yeah, and, you know, and that's a situation where, you know, you saw the tire guy waving, like, hey, hang on. And for, unfortunately, the guy that releases the car from the pit area didn't see him. And yeah, that was just a deal breaker for them in that race.
Very, very disastrous. And I mean, if they would have just seen that and just taken another second. That car was just, you know, fast. And, you know, the BOP, the balance of performance, they gave something for Acura, and Helio was on the pole for the race. And I thought they would have a little more for him, but, you know, the Cadillacs just, prototypes just stepped out, and the Pro Porsche won again.
Yeah, Earl Bamber. The 912 is, you know, was able to hold off the Corvettes, which looked pretty strong there. And, you know, the 4GTs did not have a good race. Is that just a kind of the track? Is it an issue? Are the Porsches just more in tune for a track like Long Beach, do you think?
Well, Nick Candy got the pole, and if you watch during the race, they had some trouble. I think when they made their pit stop and he, you know, gave it over to Patrick Pilet, I think they had a problem with the tires
mm-hmm.
because he was really lacking grip, forward grip off the corners and through the corners. So, and he dropped back, and then the Fords attacked them, and Earl moved forward. And, I mean, they were so close. That class is just, they've really done a pretty good job with that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ford actually pitted probably two laps too early, and they ran out of fuel. And that's why you saw the crash at the end
right.
with the Corvette. But it was just a heck of a race overall.
Speaking of the Ford GT, you know, with them, with the factory support leaving, but with you know, privateers being able to take over those cars, do you think is there any leads out there, or any rumors going about what teams do you think could step up, or could you see another team step in to take over those the Ford GTs?
My personal opinion is I really think that Bleekemore is going to have one at Le Mans this year. And I think that's just the deal that Ford is just doing with him, just because of his connection with Ford as with car dealerships across the country. Quite frankly, the electronic and engineering of those cars, it's very difficult for a privateer to get one of those cars and run it.
Yeah,
it would be
Right.
You know, unless they get in some sort of an assistance from Ford.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I wonder how much Ford would have some type of, you know, because it would seem advantageous. I mean, as long as the privateers are going to pay for it, you know, why not help support those teams? Because even though it's not Ford themselves putting the cars in victory lane, you know, if you help support those cars, you know, it's why not? You know, it's still Ford in victory lane for them.
Well, quite frankly, it's probably the budget for that Ford GT is over what they're spending on that Cadillac in the prototype class. And that's going to be the problem for a privateer to step up and want to run that. I mean, Porsche's got a better program for privateers than any manufacturer. And they'll definitely, Porsche knows how to have the assistance and help privateers, you know, with that car. But Ford, it's just, there's just so much behind the scenes that they didn't have that 10 or 15 years ago. And now there's so much engineering that is relied to make those cars even run at the race. So, I mean, it's really hard to say. I think what'll set the tone is if they do go to the 24-hour Le Mans and they do well in the amateur class there, I think then that would change the tune and maybe Ford will pick up some customers. But it's going to be tough, them leaving.
Sure.
Because it's just cars. But now there's been an announcement that McLaren's going to get
involved. I saw that. I was just going to mention that. Yeah.
Which is big, huge news. Which is really a big boost for the series.
Yeah, that certainly helps, especially with then in 2 weeks, the IMSA Sports Car Series will be at Mid-Ohio, another tight, twisty track for them as the IndyCar Series moves sets their sights on Indianapolis for the Indy Grand Prix and then the Indianapolis 500 during the month of May. Hey, I wanted to mention to you before we go here, we only got about a minute to go here, going to the World Endurance Championship, Jenson Button is stepping out of his ride because he thinks with the dominance of Toyota, why even run Le Mans? Is that kind of like taking your toys and going home type thing, or what do you think about that?
I totally think, well, there was a story a few weeks ago about Neil Johnny saying the same thing after Sebring. I mean, Toyota was 2 seconds a lap faster than the privateer car that qualified third at Sebring for the 1,000-mile race there. And I just don't get why they're not doing anything for the privateers. And they're going to lose names like Jenson Button. They're losing Neil Johnny. He's going to totally work with the Porsche electric car right now in Formula E. So, I mean, it's huge, and I don't know why they don't look at how they could make it better. It just seems like they're just giving a gift to Toyota this year.
Mm. Well, it'll be interesting to see. We look forward to chatting with you again, Andy, and have fun. And when's your next adventure?
Oh, God, I can't even keep it straight. But go to racingnation.com and read our new story about Michelin Delivers.
We will do that.
And the job that they did at Sebring for the 12-hour race and the 1,000-mile race, WEC.
Okay.
And it's great to be on here.
All right.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you. You too, Eddie. We'll talk to you in the next coming weeks on the Final Inspection Show. Coming up next, Bob Gates on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi,
presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove
on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Hey, welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zocchi taping this from last week in Tinley Park, Illinois, at the Tony Bettenhausen Recreational Center. And I'm here with Bob Gates, who is with the organization that's behind these historical markers, which is a pretty, pretty neat deal. If you remember in the 70s when you were a kid, or 80s, they're still around today, you've seen these historical markers when you're going down the highway. Well, this program, they did that in Indiana. And it was more geared for more the like racetracks and drivers and whatnot. And they've expanded it now. This is the first one in Illinois where they're actually doing one for the Bettenhausen family. So, Bob, welcome to the show. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
And Bob, of course, has been involved in racing. He's an author, authored on one of my favorite books of all time, Herdebees, and then also has done books on Troy Ruttman and also Bill Vukovich. And appreciate you coming on. And tell us how you got involved or how this organization came about.
Well, about 4 years ago, Steve, Brian Hassler, one of our co-founders, along with Mark Usler, went to the Indiana Historical Society to see about some markers for Indiana racing. There's so much racing that has went on and still goes on in Indiana, they thought it was important to start memorializing some of this. Well, the response they got from the Indiana Historical Society was that we've done one, and that's at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and that in general covers all of auto racing. So they decided, let's do it ourselves. Let's begin to create these historical markers and place them ourselves. The first one we did was at Winchester Speedway, and the second one was with Wilbur Shaw in Shelbyville, Indiana, and it just blossomed from there until we did our 39th just a couple of days ago for Dick Jordan at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum.
And, of course, Dick is one of the longtime USAC officials, and anybody involved in auto racing knows Dick and what he's done in the sport of auto racing. And Dick has a small part on this show when about 7 years ago when USAC was running at the Milwaukee Mile, he came up to me and said, I got this driver, you got to get on the show. I said, you bet, Dick. If Dick Jordan comes up to you and says, get this driver on the show, you definitely do. And that turned out to be Kyle Larson. So that was pretty cool, having a very, very young Kyle Larson on the final inspection show. But this is a neat situation here in Tinley Park, the home of the Bettenhausens, one of the most heralded names in motorsports. And this is a neat, pretty neat deal here. For those who are not aware, we're on the spot where the Bettenhausen farmers actually were the family actually farmed up until the 60s and that, and it's been parceled out over the years. And back when the Bettenhausen family lived here, it was pretty much in the sticks. And now, of course, with urban sprawl and everything, it is very built up on this side of Chicago. And a very, very nice recreation center, and they have a little room with the Bettenhausen racing memorabilia in. They have a show car in here, and it's very appropriate that the marker is here. Kind of walk us through how you guys came from, okay, we did Indiana, maybe we can branch out a little bit more.
Yeah, and what happened, that program became so popular in Indiana. Of course, other people from other states were hearing about it and wanted to do something similar, maybe in different areas. So we started looking into that. And as an offshoot of the IRMA, Indiana Racing Memorials Association, we created ARMA, the American Racing Memorial Association. And the first one marker, ARMA marker that we're doing is, is for Tony or the Bettenhausen family here at the Tony Bettenhausen Recreation Center. In June, early June, we got one for the Vukoviches scheduled in Fresno, California, and then several more coming up after that. But really, ARMA is an offspring of IRMA and the popularity of these historic markers, remembering racers, racetracks, racing mechanics, racing people now all over the country.
And I think that it's a pretty neat deal because you see the name Bettenhausen, and I'm sure, people know, Bettenhausen, yeah, I think he was a race car driver. But having that marker there, I think, was, having the kids maybe look at it and go, oh, wow, maybe, and then what's nice is these are usually on both sides. I've seen them. They're very nice. And it gives you a good thumbnail sketch, but also I think the neat thing about these is that if a kid or that is looking at it, he might go, when I get home, I'm going to do more research on them. And I think that's that these are so important that it might motivate some of these kids and some other people, you know, like, I want to know more about whether it's Wilbur Shaw, Tony Bettenhausen, or the Bettenhausen family and that. And have you found that out with these markers?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what we see happening with them. Again, there's so much interest in it. They become so popular. The communities have really stepped up, just like here at the Tony Bettenhausen Rec Center. You know, the community of Tinley Park stepped up to help fund this and also do all the ceremony and the placement of it. And exactly what you mentioned there, Steve, is what we see happening. People become interested in what's on these markers, and this social media era that we're living in is so easy to jump on Google or some other resource and type in Tony Bettenhausen or Gary Bettenhausen or Wilbur Shaw or whoever it might be. And I think especially here at this rec center, it's great because this rec center is aimed at children.
Excellent. We're talking with Bob Gates, a noted author and part of the ARMA, the American Memorial Racing Association. Did I get that
American
right?
American Racing Memorial Association.
There you go. See, I knew I would screw that up. That's why I have you here, you know. So it's a neat deal, and we're going to be posting photos on the TFI Facebook page, the TFI, the Final Inspection Facebook page. We'll have some stuff, posts on Twitter and whatnot. So looking forward to that. And, Bob, thank you for spending some time with us.
Okay. Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. Bob Gates, and we're at the Tony Bettenhausen Center. A pretty neat deal. And when you get a chance, do some research on them, and we'll have that information on our Facebook site, too, where you can follow along. And if you also, if you want to, contribute to a very worthy cause. Very good. So thank you, Bob. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Steve.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.